Welcome, friends, to Studio 2. I'm Avi Wolfman-Aaron.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. Avi, we have about a month left in the summer.
Okay.
And
didn't think you were going to start there, but go ahead.
And once you hit the fall, cuffing season begins. Okay. And if you don't know what cuffing season is.
Yeah, tell us.
It usually starts in the fall, late fall-ish, and it lasts until after Valentine's Day. And this is the time when single people hope to cuff or lock in a romantic partner for the cold months.
You know, back in...
That's why we're doing this show, by the way.
So back in like medieval Wales, what people did if they wanted, if you were a young man and you wanted to court a young woman, is you carved an intricate wooden spoon for her and presented it to her to show
your interest.
To show, and if she accepted it, you were matched up. I'm not making this up. This is real.
Wow.
You would carve an intricate wooden spoon, and it showed that you were a very capable young man. You were very good with, you know, your hands, woodworking. It's more complicated now. You can't just make a spoon.
You can't just make a spoon. And it's getting, you know, once we hit cuffing season, you want to be in a good position.
Yeah. Welsh cuffing season was a lot simpler.
For the winter. And so today on the show, we're going to take a look at the dating scene.
Mm-hmm.
What's it like these days? How do you meet people?
How many spoons are you carving?
What has been your experience? Are you on the apps? Do you have your friends hooking you up? And if you found love, how'd you do it? We want to hear both your success and horror stories.
Mm-hmm.
Call us. The number is 888-477-9499 or email studio2@whyy.com.
Carve your question into a spoon.
That spoon story. I'm just like.
Can you imagine being a single woodworker today and being like looking for that time machine, man?
I need at least a cup. A spoon is just not going to do in 2024.
Google these spoons. They're unbelievable.
They're beautiful.
They're
spoons.
So beautiful.
How big are they?
Huge.
Oh, they're big. Oh,
they're big spoons. Yeah, yeah.
That's a big spoon.
If you're really serious about it, yeah, you better carve a big spoon.
All right.
They're called love spoons. Before you could spoon, you had to carve a spoon. Think about it.
Yeah. All right.
This is real.
You know, Avi, look, I take your advice. 16 years since you locked it in. So I believe you.
All right. Studio2@whyy.org. We want to hear about your dating perspectives and a lot of comments already coming in.
Thank you.
Trio of local news stories, as we always give you to start off the show. And we'll start with the DNC. It's what everyone's talking about. You know, big speech by VP nominee Tim Walz last night. But from a local perspective, a lot of folks were locked in on Pennsylvania Governor Josh Shapiro, who had a big primetime slot and centered his speech around the fight for freedom. Let's hear a bit of it.
It's not freedom to tell our children what books they're allowed to read. No, it's not. And it's not freedom to tell women what they can do with their bodies. And hear me on this, it sure as hell isn't freedom to say, you can go vote, but he gets to pick the winner. That's not freedom.
Big speech, but it's also been a big week for Shapiro beyond the podium. Julia Taruso from The Inquirer had a really interesting story just sort of detailing what Shapiro's been up to in Chicago as his national profile rises. And he's been talking to delegates from New Hampshire and Nevada and New Jersey and Arkansas, etc. You know, being a good surrogate, of course, but also making some of those national connections. And that's worth noting as well for a really prominent local politician. The other headline, former President Donald Trump, after Shapiro's speech, attacked him in a midnight post on his social media platform. Trump called Shapiro, quote, a highly overrated Jewish governor. Shapiro responded today, told reporters in Chicago, it's clear over the last few days Donald Trump is obsessed with me and obsessed with continuing to spew hate and division in our politics. He is someone who has routinely peddled anti-Semitic tropes like this.
Wow. I was pretty shocked by that, you know, comment, considering once VP Harris made the choice to go with Minnesota Governor Tim Walz as her VP pick, he actually defended Shapiro and said that, you know, Shapiro got shafted and all this kind of stuff. And now he's sort of sidelining him in this way. But, you know, Shapiro responded. Got to mention, last night was all about the VP pick.
Tim Walz,
who gave a rousing speech. There was a powerhouse group, though. I mean, you heard from Oprah, Stevie Wonder was there.
Yep.
I was like, oh my God, Stevie Wonder. I even tweeted about that.
Yeah.
And then John Legend performed.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was
Philly connected.
Yeah. And then exactly. Went to UPenn. And of course, former President Bill Clinton was one of the headliners as well. So very, you know, interesting night.
And I'm sure it will be another interesting
night. Oh, and Congressman Andy Kemp from our area,
yeah,
from New
true.
Jersey, was
yep.
also
running for
a speaker.
Senate.
Yeah.
Story number two.
Yes. A man who was incarcerated in Delaware County Prison was released by mistake. And it took jail officials several days to realize that they had let him go.
Uh-oh.
Now, these are officials from the George W. Hill Correctional Facility. They accidentally released a prisoner. His name is Daniel Rogers. They released him on August 9th.
Uh-huh.
They didn't notice till August 15th. Rogers had pleaded guilty for DUI and had been incarcerated since the 5th. So he had only been in jail for a few days. But the thing that is a red flag is this is not the first time that they had an accidental release that occurred at that facility. Back in February of last year, a 21-year-old man was mistakenly released due to a clerical error.
Hmm.
And of course, all of this kind of underscores some of the issues that we've been having in the prison systems on the county jail level.
Post-pandemic,
in Philadelphia.
Definitely.
Yeah, yeah, definitely post-pandemic. In Philly, a federal judge ordered the city to pay $25 million for jail issues. And all of this money is supposed to go into a dedicated fund for improvements. The city found that the city was in contempt of court for failing to address inhumane conditions at the jails.
That's a huge story.
And this was a huge story because, you know, the prison had been dealing with staffing shortages, all sorts of issues at the prisons brought on by the pandemic.
I would love to do something bigger on this.
Yeah,
because
we should
the conditions
talk about this.
In jails locally, and I imagine it's not just, you know, confined to
mm-mm.
this part of the country. They're really acute right now. A lot of it traces back to post-pandemic staffing shortages.
Yeah, and of course, right now, the jails in Philly currently about 45% below where they need to be on staffing. And if you even remember,
that's
we covered
a huge gap.
The other story we covered that dealt with a county jail was the case of Danilo Cavalcante, the convicted murderer who escaped from a prison in Chester County last fall. Remember, there was a 14-day manhunt that landed with him getting caught and going back to jail. But these are all issues. It just kind of says we
feels
need to do something.
Feels interrelated.
Yeah,
it feels like
definitely.
Part of something bigger. Something else that's gotten a lot bigger recently, a local liquor brand. So you might have seen these Surfside beverages. You seen the Surfsides?
I have. Once I saw the picture, I was like,
it's
I
like
have
a
seen
slender
this.
Can. It's a ready-to-drink cocktail that mixes vodka with different types of tea and lemonade. They're called Surfside. No bubbles, by the way, which
ooh.
I really appreciate. It's not carbonated.
You don't like the bubbles?
No, I'm not a bubble guy.
Okay. I like the bubbles.
So Jen Ladd at the Enquirer. Well, we're different that way.
I know.
And you're more effervescent than me. It makes sense. Jen Ladd at the Enquirer profiled Surfside's rise, and it's actually a really interesting story. So Surfside is made by a Kensington-based distiller called Stateside. It's not a very old company, and it really did not have a big footprint until about 3 years ago when they came out with this product called Surfside. Now they're in 46 states, and they say sales are up 350% this year. And this is partly a story about taste. People like the way these Surfside beverages taste. But it's also partly a story about regulation. So you probably already noticed that there was already this huge boom in canned alcoholic seltzer drinks.
Mm-hmm.
And that has started to level off. These seltzer drinks, Cherry, are almost all made with malted grain.
Who
and that's
malted?
Because
yeah. mm-hmm.
those types of beverages are taxed and regulated differently. You can distribute them more widely. You can buy them more widely, more cheaply. But then these Surfside people came along and said, all this stuff, all this malted beverage stuff doesn't taste good. Let's just make a drink that's actual vodka mixed with iced tea or mixed with lemonade.
Yeah. Some people like it simple like that. Yeah.
And they were right because the Surfside thing has totally taken off. And now here's the real story. It might take off even more because starting next month, Pennsylvania is changing the way it regulates canned cocktail beverages. You're going to be able to get them very soon at restaurants and grocery stores, just like you can the malted beverages. And Surfside is perfectly positioned to take advantage of that here and maybe in Texas and California, which could do the same thing. And I've been told a lot of people live in those two states, Cherry.
Yeah.
So it's a really interesting story. It's about liquor. but it's also kind of about regulation.
And it's also about being perfectly positioned when the regulations shift. And I have to say, once I saw the picture of it, I realized I have had some.
Yeah.
They're very convenient. Not on a date.
Okay. Oh, I was looking for a transition. I had my first
one. But at a cookout.
I had my first one.
I had it at
over the weekend at a wedding.
Oh.
That I assume was the product of dates.
Yes.
It was delicious, by the way. I did like it a lot.
And since we're talking about dates, that's what the show is about. We want to know, what is the dating scene like for you? How do you meet people? Email us, studio2@whyy.org. We want to hear from you. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
He will call you today unless he's a fool, in which case you don't want him anyways. But if he's a good man, you're getting a call.
Miss Smith's office. Oh, hi, Mr. Fenton. Can you hold on and I'll see if she is available?
Okay. Guess what? Miss Smith, I have Keith on line one.
Never take the first call. Everything must be done on your time. Make him wait. Jason, please tell him that I'm just getting out of a meeting. He should call back in about 10 minutes. Thank you.
She told me to call her back in 10 minutes.
Don't even worry about that. She's just stalling for time, dog. She disheveled right now. She don't know what she gonna do.
Mm-hmm. Okay, 2 minutes. Play the game with her.
The timeless art of courtship. Welcome back to Studio 2. I'm Avi Wolf-Manarit.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. You heard Vivica Fox there, starring in the 2001 hit comedy, Two Can Play at That Game. Fox plays Shantae Smith, a 20-something career woman who is giving advice to women on how to keep their men in check. And I don't know if that was good advice or whatever, because a lot has changed over the past 20 years, but that clip still makes me laugh and do a finger snap, okay? But dating has never been easy. Whether your friend sets you up on a blind date or you connect with someone on a dating app, there are bound to be plenty of mismatches, awkward moments, and that realization within a few minutes of sitting down for dinner or coffee that that person is just not right for you.
Even with all the technology and psychological science that companies pour into their matchmaking platforms online, it's still really hard to find the right partner. So why can't we make it easier? Is it just inevitable that single people have to weather a lot of bad dates? I hope not. We've got two guests to help us walk through modern dating and how the scene is changing. And later we're going to get in some dating tips to maybe make things a little easier. Let me introduce our guests for the hour. Netta Rifai is a Philly-based dating coach and matchmaker. Welcome to Studio 2.
Thanks for having me here. It's a pleasure.
And we are also speaking with Rich Juzwiak, co-writer of Slate's sex and relationship advice column called How to Do It. Rich, welcome to Studio 2.
Thank you for having me.
And listeners, if you're out there looking for love, what's your experience been like? Do you use the apps? Are you sick of online dating? What's working or not working for you? Give us a call. 888-477-9499. You can also email studio2@whyy.org.
We're going to kick off this show with a caller.
Ooh.
We have Patrick from Roxborough who wants to talk about how he and his partner met. Patrick, you're on Studio 2. What's your comment?
Hey, thank you guys for having me. Totally love the show. My partner, we met like almost officially 2 years ago. Through a dating app. And, you know, I think one of the things, whether it was a comment in the preview for the show, but essentially, like, we use the dating app as a tool instead of trying to use it to learn everything about who each other was.
Interesting.
Wow.
You know, like, over the date, the first date and the second date, you know, we sort of went through all of these questions and things. And, you know, obviously we made sure each other wasn't a serial killer before we went on
date. That's important, yeah.
Yeah, very important, very important. But, you know, this quote, like, sort of sticks out in my head that was from a public speaking class many years ago. You know, the instructor said, "The opposite of curiosity is judgment." And I think
I love
that. Success because we were very curious about each other, and we found out, like, We both like to bike. We both like to go out, explore the city. And it just sort of naturally progressed over this, you know, 2 year period where we
I love it. Thank you so much, Patrick.
We'll leave it there. I love that we're starting with some positivity.
A success story. That was great.
And so I want to sort of start this conversation by taking a look at the dating scene, because Carlos writes on Facebook, the dating scene is a grab bag. It's nothing and everything all at once. How has the dating scene sort of shifted over the past several years? And Rich, I will start with you. How have you seen things change?
Well, I think that technology has a huge, has had a huge impact on it. I'm not sure that, I think with technology often, and in this specific case, you know, the conveniences create more issues. So theoretically, it's easier to connect with people. But what you're connecting with is a few pictures, a self-written description, and then some text. I think your mind is filling in all the blanks in the meantime. And so that when you get in front of this person, perhaps you're disappointed because you've created kind of a fantasy image of them. That's if you get carried away and you don't actually, I mean, Patrick described a very prudent way of using the apps, which was to use them as a tool, hopefully not invest too much. And then you get in front of the person and you can kind of decide for yourself, is this really a thing? I think a lot of the app fatigue and disappointment comes from kind of the stories that we build in our heads when we're having these conversations that are incomplete. And then I think another way, and probably not to any great degree, but non-monogamy and kind of dating multiple people is at least much more talked about now than it previously was. So I think that there's probably a little bit of a equaling out, a balancing out of like, dating is harder, yes, but then there are some people who are dating a lot of people and they seem to be able to do that with ease. So it is a kind of mixed bag.
And by the way, some quick statistics, more than half of the people under 30, 53% have used a dating app compared to just 13% of folks over age 65. So it definitely is who uses the apps and who doesn't as a generational thing. I want to bring in another caller. We have Cherie, who wants to talk about how she and her husband met online. Cherie, you're on Studio 2.
Hello. Thanks for having me. Love the topic. My name is Cherie Syfax. My husband and I met online, and we've been married now for 3 years.
All right.
I love the clip from the movie, Two Can Play That Game. Not so much because I played any games, but I definitely stayed busy. So I was not always available when my husband called me, because I think sometimes we do that as women. We meet someone, we kind of like him, and then he becomes our husband in our heads. Mm. And then we are totally, you know, being almost stalkerish. So I did keep busy, which was great. And then over time, you know, our relationship developed and he proposed and we got married a year later. I think the biggest thing for me, and I tell people this all the time, is I did have an amazing dating experience. We met, you know, again on Match, but I think I kind of had a great relationship with myself. And I think that sometimes ends up being the missing piece. So you feel dejected or rejected. If a guy liked me, great. If you didn't like me, that's okay too, because at the end of the day, I like myself. So I think that really, really went a long way in my dating experience, and why I felt like it was really a positive one, because at the end of the day, I'm not going to be for everyone, but that's not necessarily a reflection on me. It's just that that chemistry didn't work in that particular situation.
Love that call. Thank you for that.
Netta Rifai, you're nodding along here, so you were vibing with some of that. Give me some of your thoughts on those first two calls.
I have to agree with Cherie here. I think that she did it the way that I would recommend everyone do it. Sure, dating apps have given us a way of meeting a whole lot more people than we ever have before. So it has increased our capacity to meet people. It has not increased our dating skills.
Right.
It has in no way affected our dating skills. And that is what we don't focus on. And the thing that prevents that app fatigue, that dragging feeling that we start to feel, is because we expect other people to have the dating skills that we don't have, that we haven't even put the time to developing. And here Cherie is, that's what she has done, and that is what has led to her success.
Dating skills.
I
so
realize
what does that
was
mean?
Skills.
Like, yeah, what are the skills? Because, you know, I think a lot of people are winging it. They're just like, I'm going to go be myself.
Mm-hmm.
Is that not, that's not the way it works?
It's not the way it works on an app, that's for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, having a conversation in real life is very different than having a conversation on an app. And there needs to be a lot more forgiveness built in. And there needs to be a lot more effort put in. People can't see your face. They can't read your body language. They can't read what your exclamation point means. It could mean excitement or it could mean disappointment. It's the skill set is just hasn't been developed. And I can't say it actually was previously. It was a lot easier to meet people pre-apps. We didn't really have to lean into our skill set. We just got to know someone naturally and comfortably. And that didn't require us to grow the way modern dating does.
So where do you start? If you're, you know, maybe you've been single for a while, you weren't really like trying to date, but then you look up and you're like, oh, I would really like a partner. So, but you don't have skills because it wasn't something you necessarily taught in school. Where do you start?
I think like anything else, you turn to the experts. You could hire a dating coach. I mean, turn to your successful friends, learn about the world, be curious. I really love that quote I just heard about. The opposite of curiosity is
Patrick,
judgment.
Yeah.
Be curious. Lean into others who have been successful. If you still can't find what you're looking for, hire a coach. Still don't find what you're looking for, hire a matchmaker. There are resources out there if you want them.
I want to read this comment from Nick in Wilmington who says, I think the major issue with dating apps is that they're really meeting apps. You're not really meant to find someone on the app and immediately start dating. The apps are a tool that you can use to meet more single people, but then it's up to every person to figure out if they actually want to go on a date with that person and put the effort in. And then it gets even harder to convert from date to relationship. That's Nick's perspective. Mm-hmm. Okay, Rich, I got to ask a big rewind question here.
Okay.
What are the dating apps? Like, what's even out there? A lot of folks have never used these mechanisms to find people. So give us a little lay of the land just to get us all up to speed.
Sure. I mean, they range greatly. The more general ones, I would say, are Tinder, which is a very kind of basic, you come to the fold just, you know, with a profile and you start matching with people or not. You start kind of like assessing what the options are and going from there. There are apps like Hinge, which you know, are more of your pool is based on kind of a connections and your social network. There are apps which, like, I think Bumble is one where women are the ones who make the first move. The conversation can't happen unless the woman initiates it. I'm pretty sure that's Bumble. And then there are other apps, you know, like Field, for example, which is more about non-monogamy. And polyamorous and other stuff along those lines. And then there are, you know, specific apps for men who are looking for men. You know, that's a whole other subset because gay culture is very strong. That's my culture. And so things are can work a little bit differently there. I mean, a lot of times for gay men, the dating isn't really part of the app at all. It's about a much more fleeting connection. There's
quite
a lot
a
of options.
More hookup, yeah.
It's tons of Match.com is a big one. OkCupid, those are kind of, you know, a lot of those are they started as webs. Those two started as websites, so people use them as websites, and they've held on to their popularity. They're very early ones, you know, from before, you know, there were phones to do this on. So yeah, there's a huge, huge swath of options. And, you know, yeah. I mean, it's kind of like...
Can I ask one more question, though, Rich, before we put a bow on this? Do you subscribe to this idea that there is dating app burnout or that they're somehow losing popularity or favor with people? Because I've read some think PC things about that. I mean, what do you think about, like, I guess the trajectory of these apps?
I don't know what the actual data is in terms of are users dropping off? Are people looking for alternate ways to these alternatives? What were introduced as alternatives? Are we now looking for other alternatives? I don't know what the raw numbers are. I know that people today have more of an opportunity to complain in public via social media and websites. So we hear a lot of that. But I do think that there is a lot of dissatisfaction that comes as a result of these apps. Is it different than dating dissatisfaction was prior to the apps? Probably qualitatively, but I'm not sure quantitatively. I think this has always been a struggle for people. And like I said before, with new technology comes new issues.
Yeah. And listeners, if you're out there looking for love, what's been your experience? Do you use the dating apps? Are you sick of online dating? Do you prefer in real life meetings? What's working? What's not working? You can call us 888-477-9499 or email studio2@whyy.org. And I want to bring in this caller because it's going to tee up my next question to you, Netta. We have Bruce from Delco who wants to talk about re-entering the dating scene at a later age. Bruce, you're on Studio 2. What's your comment?
Thanks for taking my call. I lost my wife of about 45 years a number of months ago. And we had a very tight relationship. And I've been getting used to, it's not easy trying to get used to walking into an empty house. So I've been kind of looking around online. And I find it overwhelming. I did contact one of the dating services, and suddenly I'm getting, I think, dozens of emails from dating services every single day. It's all I can do to just trash them all.
Yeah.
Although I would very much like to meet somebody, but you know, I'm 81 years old, and I don't have the same kind of abilities, and I don't have the same things to offer as I did 45 years ago when I got married. So I'm kind of in a little bit of a jam here.
We're going to try to help you out.
Deal with it.
Yeah, we're going to try to help you out.
And Bruce, I'm so sorry about the loss of your beloved wife. 45 years, that's a long time to be with somebody.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you for that. And Bruce, we'll leave it there with Bruce. But Netta, I want you to respond to Bruce and sort of like people end up back on the dating scene sometimes, you know, after because of loss of a partner, or maybe your marriage doesn't work out or your long-term relationship doesn't work out. And it's a shock to the system. Can you give some advice for folks like that? And please tell Bruce how to get rid of some of these emails. Yeah.
Bruce, I am so sorry for your loss, and I cannot imagine all the feelings that you are experiencing. They don't sound happy, and they don't sound positive. And if I were honest, what I'm hearing in you is that, I mean, sure, a little excitement about what the future might look like, but if I were honest with you and giving you advice I could really stand behind right now would be to first start with some grief counseling. A few months is a really short amount of time for 45 years of love. So I would start there. And I think in that counseling, you will start to figure out exactly what you're looking for going forward. These emails are such a great opportunity, but they probably feel overwhelming because you don't even know what you're looking for. But they're going to be a gift when you are certain of what you're looking for. There are ways for you to meet people moving forward after you figure out what it is you want out of your next relationship, because it's not going to be the same as what you had with your wife. So what does that look like for you going forward? And then once you have that, tap into those emails of all those different services and stand up and write an email, respond, tell them exactly what it is you're looking for, and they'll know that's what to send. On the side, I'm also a professional matchmaker, so I am one of those people that sends out emails like that to singles on a day-to-day basis, and we want that feedback so that we can match you successfully.
And that my follow-up question is, because Bruce is not alone. A lot of people do end up back. I myself, you think this is forever, and then you end up back on the scene. And in that interim,
the dating scene
changes, and it is a shock to the system. How do you pick yourself up and sort of like get back in the pool?
I think it's like anything else. It's like learning something for the first time, and that's okay. So once again, lean into those around you who are having the same experience you are, something similar. It does look a little different for every generation, right? Someone who's 22, who broke up with their person that they've been with since middle school, scene is very different, capability is very different. Someone who is going through their first divorce at 38, very different. Someone being widowed at 81, very different. So all the ways to get back into the scene will feel different, but they're all actually the same route. I would say to, I mean, my first thing is to find the people who are having the success that you want to be having, right? What is working for them? Do the internal work to see what's comfortable for you and what your challenges are, and then find the resources.
And I just want to thank our callers. You know, yes. People are being vulnerable this hour.
I know.
And you're helping other folks when you leave those comments, and we really appreciate this. I want to bring in another voice of a listener here. This is on our voicemail line, and this listener is just talking about dating in general. Let's hear this listener's thoughts.
My name is Michelle, and I'm calling from Philadelphia. And I just want to say my experience is there are a lot of options. There's a lot of availability, but that pool shrinks dramatically when you start talking about people that are very serious, people who have an end goal of having like a committed, healthy relationship. I don't know anyone who is dating right now that is having an easy time.
I want to direct that now to Rich Juzwiak, mm-hmm. co-writer of Slate's Sex and Relationship Advice column, How to Do It. In this age where you can cast such a wide net via these sometimes Instagram, sometimes these specialized dating apps, websites, you get a lot of inputs, right?
Yeah.
And then like narrowing that into a relationship does seem pretty daunting. I mean, is that like a typical challenge, Rich? Like how do folks deal with just the sheer number of people you can quote unquote meet these days?
I think that's actually part of what drives the app fatigue. You know, there was that book a few years ago by Barry Schwartz, The Paradox of Choice, that basically, it was in 2004. And the thesis was like, you know, we have all of these choices as part of our modern conveniences, and yet they're making us unhappy. So, and I think that you can kind of get lost in the sea of people. I think really what you have to do is be as forthright in what you want and what you're looking for, and let people filter themselves out. You know, if you're not for somebody, that might hurt in the moment, that kind of rejection. But the bigger picture is that that's one less person that you have clogging up your feed. So you really just have to focus on the quality connections to offset the quantity of potential connections.
Yeah, I want to talk about this idea of meeting in real life, and I want to read a couple of, because there's so many options now. We have Delicia, who's left a comment on our voicemail, who says she is a people person and meets people everywhere she goes. Eric, who advises folks to find their dates at church, says the sad part is a lot of women want a guy who doesn't want them or treats them wrong, and the guy they want doesn't want them or wants others and can't stay loyal. So there's all this back and forth, says Eric. So I want to talk about the whole meeting in real life. Is this a new, I mean, it seems like it's on the comeback, Netta.
I don't think it ever left.
It never left. Real life never left.
That was obvious for him. He's like, that's the way most people meet. And we're gonna talk about this a little bit more after the break. But you're saying that this is the main way people meet.
I think it is a primary way. I don't know the main way, but it never left. It never stopped. People just stopped trying.
Okay, so we're going to hear a lot more on the other side of this break. And I'm really fascinated by this. We're going to bring in someone local here in Philly who is doing, I guess, almost like a conceptual public art project around dating. It's a pop-up, but it gets at some of these issues that we've been talking about how people are hungering for some of that like real life
connection,
tangible connection. So we're going to introduce that person on the other side of the break, and we want to keep hearing from you about dating. That's the topic today on Studio 2, modern dating. What's it like out there? Studio 2 at WHYY.org. Call 888-477-9499.
The candidates for November are set.
I know Donald Trump's type.
Between now and Election Day.
We are not going back.
A campaign season unfolding faster.
Kamala Harris is not getting a promotion.
Than any in recent history.
Make America great again.
Follow it all with new episodes every weekday on the NPR Politics Podcast.
See, baby, it's not that hard.
8-1-8-3-1-0.
So how long do I wait to call?
About a day.
Tomorrow.
Tomorrow, then a day.
Yeah. So 2 days.
Yeah, I guess you could call it that.
Definitely.
2 days. 2 days is like industry standard. You know, I used to wait 2 days to call anybody, but now it's like everyone in town waits 2 days. So I think 3 days is kind of money. What do you think?
Yeah, well, but 2's enough not to look anxious.
Yeah, 2's enough not to look anxious, but I think 3 days is kind of money.
Yeah,
you know,
but you know what? Maybe I'll wait 3 weeks. How's that? And tell her I was cleaning out my wallet and I just happened to run into her number.
Then ask her where you met her.
Yeah, I'll ask her where I met her. I don't remember. What does she look like? And then I'll ask if we f***ed. Would that be the money?
You know what? Ha, 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 Mike. Laugh all you want. But if you call too soon, you might scare off a nice baby who's ready to party.
Well, how long are you guys going to wait to call your babies?
Six days.
Welcome back to Studio 2. I'm Cherry Gregg.
How about that transition? I'm Avi Wolfman Aaron. Okay. That was from the 1996 film Swingers, about a group of guys in L.A. looking for love. Of course, that was before dating apps and online matchmaking platforms took over the scene, when you had to meet someone at a bar,
ooh,
work, maybe in a class.
Oh, wow.
Today, about 50% of people under the age of 30 do use apps, but is that really the best way to find a romantic partner? How much has it changed our search for love? We want to know what you think about today's dating scene. What's hard? What's easy? If you have someone, how did you find that someone? Give us a call, 888-477-9499. Or email studio2@whyy.org.
And I want to reintroduce our guests. In studio, we have Netta Rifai, a Philly-based dating coach and matchmaker. We also have Rich Jeswiak, co-writer of Slate's sex and relationship advice column, How to Do It. And joining us now is Kate Catanella of Free Dating Advice Philly. Welcome to the conversation.
Thank you for having me.
All right, Kate. So I was sitting outside a bar in South Philly recently, and I saw these people carrying big signs back from an event, and it said free dating advice. It must have been you. I now realize in retrospect.
Yeah.
And I was immediately curious. I was like, what are these people doing with these big signs that say free dating advice? So what is it that you do? What is free dating advice?
Yeah, so free dating advice is something that my friend Sam Stanton and I started a couple months ago. We're a roving pop-up where we offer dating consultations. People can come up to us and ask us for a dating profile review or just kind of talk about their dating situation that they have going on. And we offer our objective opinion, just serving as two random strangers in a park that can kind of help you get out of your own head.
And people really do it. They walk up to you and they spill their secrets.
Yeah, it's been really interesting. People can bring us like really vulnerable situations, and we just try to approach it with empathy and with like an ear toward helping them.
So what kind of questions do people have about dating that they come to you for?
Yeah, I think a lot of the time, if they're not asking for a profile review, they're usually just pretty fatigued from dating in general, and they kind of just want some reassurance that, you know, it'll get better or that they'll, you know, eventually find somebody. And I think that, you know, we just try to encourage people to keep going or take a break if they need to. I think taking a break is a totally valid part of dating. And so it just kind of depends on everybody's individual situation. A lot of the time, too, people are in the thick of having some kind of issue with their partner and they just want to, you know, talk about that too.
Yeah, sounding board.
Yeah, totally.
And the in-person part of it, I mean, how do you regard that? Because, you know, I would imagine that for you, even just talking about this topic in person with someone, it might feel different than doing the same activity online, even over Zoom. Like, does that face-to-face in-person part of it, how do you think it just sort of factors into the way the conversations unfold?
Totally. I think that that's a huge part of what we do, is offering these face-to-face, hearts-to-hearts is what we call them. I think swiping through an app can feel really depersonalized. And so having somebody that you can actually talk to face-to-face kind of opens you up to having a fresh perspective and just kind of makes you feel seen and heard in a way that you kind of can't do online. And it's also really hard to kind of get express yourself online in the way that you can with somebody in person. And so I think that's a huge part of what we do and a huge part of why we started this was just to get off dating apps and just get dating offline and just bring it to a face-to-face situation.
Yeah, I want to bring in a caller. We have Jason from Norristown who has a question about differences in dating based on gender. Jason, you're on Studio 2. What's your question?
Hi, so I'm recently dating again after a long relationship. And I went and spoke to people because I've been out of it for so long about what their experiences were and what I should think about and how to approach things. And a lot of the men that I have talked to and even some of my female friends who've been online dating have basically given me this perspective that a lot of women are just swamped with messages from sometimes hundreds of men a day. And I've had guys who have been giving me advice saying, oh, just message as many people as you can because it's this big numbers game and you have to get yourself out there. But that just seems impersonal to me and not something I'm interested in. So I just wanted to hear your experts talk about the different perspectives of women and men and what that is like. Because as a guy, if you're reaching out to women, I want to see what their perspective is and, you know, try to figure out how to approach that better than just trying to send out like mass emails.
Yeah, spamming everybody. It does seem like is like the way it works. That's a great
question from Jason in Norristown.
So Netta Rifai, let me direct that to
you. Yes.
Is there a better way for Jason to go about this than the advice he's getting from a lot of
people? Because he's checking in
friends?
With people who are out there, but clearly, I mean, that's some interesting advice there.
It's interesting for sure. There's probably always something to anything we do in life where it's a numbers game, whether it be gambling or the lottery or whatever. Yeah. But it's not just about the numbers. It's about the quality. I work with thousands of singles a year between being a dating coach and being a matchmaker. And when people have not left the apps. I mean, I guess I also don't know numbers in terms of quantitatively if people are actually leaving by the masses, but everyone I speak to is on apps.
Yeah.
And women still talk about, yeah, they get flooded with messages. That is true. They respond to the ones that stand out.
But what stands out typically? Like,
if someone actually makes a comment that shows that they read their profile. Yeah. Someone didn't just start quality. Off with, hi, how's your day? Nobody wants that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Someone wants someone that says, I love that thing you're doing in your photo. I love that your profile says that you love the Eagles or that you read poetry or that you play backgammon or whatever it is. When someone shows that they've actually invested some time into seeing a little bit about who you are, what you were willing to at least put out to the world,
yeah.
That stands out to someone.
Kate, can I ask Kate real quick? I mean, is that a common experience for women on dating apps that it's just like their inbox, or I don't know what it is, it called an inbox? I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
I'm old. That it's just like bombarded every day. Like it's an overwhelming experience. Do you hear that?
Yeah, totally. And I'm on the apps myself.
Yeah.
And it is true that you do get a huge amount of messages. And I think Netta's right. Like if you show that you've read my prompts and you're responding to one of them, or you are making a comment about like something in the background or something that is written on my t-shirt, it shows that you are actually like paying attention to the person you're sending a message to. And I don't get the impression then that you're just like blasting a message to me and it's the same message that you've blasted to everybody else.
Yeah. Be a human. Yeah. Don't be a bot, basically.
And,
right.
And Rich, is it different for guys on the other end? I mean, are men not getting the inundation of comments or they have to always be the aggressor in the situation?
I mean, I think culturally they're set up to be the aggressor, right? I mean, before there were dating apps, there was a kind of huge cliche of pickup lines, right? Like, and when we're talking about that, we're talking about men giving them. So I think that there is probably a certain expectation in general, and I've even heard women talk about gamifying the apps or kind of beating the apps at their game by like not responding or not reaching out and letting people, because there's you know, the algorithm will do a bunch of different things in terms of who, sometimes depending on the app, like who you're allowed to see or who you're allowed to talk to. So I've heard people talk about that. So there's that kind of aspect of it as well. But yeah, I mean, I think in general, what we see is kind of the very traditional, what you expect, men reach out and women receive. Obviously, not in all cases, certainly, but broadly speaking, I think that kind of stereotype holds.
Let me read a comment, just a little success story comment from a listener. This is Elaine in her 70s. Elaine says she met the love of her life at the Atlantic County Animal Show.
Aww.
Her cat and her partner now of 6 years have traveled to 32 states, and she's very, very happy with her cat. So I love that. Sometimes it's not always a human connection. It could be a cat connection. Yeah. Let's bring in a caller now, Valerie from Princeton, who has an interesting story to share. Valerie, you're on Studio 2.
Hi, how are you?
We're great.
I have a very good friend who, during the pandemic, moved her company from New York City to Maui. And while she was there, decided that for 30 days she was going to date a different guy. And each day she would try like a different flirtation technique or different form of questioning, something. She's a neuroscientist and a psychologist, so it was sort of like an experiment for her in a way. But also an amazing way to meet people. And on the ninth day, she ended up meeting another friend of mine who they've now been dating for the last 3 years. So it really worked. Yeah, and I think the key to it was actually like being playful about meeting these people in the wild. Well, not really in the wild, but meeting them on the app, but then getting together and having it be casual and not being this like stuffy situation where everybody's nervous. It was really a playful way to interact with somebody. And from that, she gained friends, but also now the person that she loves. So it's pretty cool.
It sounds like a setup for like an Adam Sandler movie or something. Like 30 dates, 30 dates in Maui or something.
Thank you so much.
I like that.
Thank you so much, Valerie. This has me thinking. Valerie's comments, first of all, I love them. And I, back in the day, I was a power dater.
That's what that's called?
Yeah, I called it power dating. I was like 4 dates a week. I mean, I want to talk about volume because does that help? I mean, and what kind of attitude should you have? Because if you volume date, right, you're going out with a whole bunch of people, you don't have a bad attitude, and then you have more of a chance of meeting someone. I mean, I know that's not an option for everybody, but just your reaction, Kate, Netta, your thoughts about that.
So I will say that I applaud people, power daters, or people who take on
that
sort of effort.
Back in the day. Yes.
So last year, I did a self-project for 100 dates in 1 year. And to figure out and test all of the advice I give to all of my clients on a day-to-day basis. So people who come back and say, this doesn't work. This is still the scene. This is the landscape. I don't know how to do this thing. This thing's not successful. I tested it all. It all works really beautifully. You can have a really... this conversation started out talking about making dating easier.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I don't know if there's a way to make it easier. I do know there's a way to make it more fun.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that can really offset a lot of the drag and the fatigue and the disappointment we constantly feel. Because there's something really to be gained from every person we meet. It might not be the person for us, but there is something to be gained from everyone. So it did not end up in the love of my life. But it ended up with a lot of amazing experiences, a lot of amazing conversations. And some of the people I went on dates with ended up with loves of their life as a result of meeting me, which is great.
Huh.
Yeah. And Kate, do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah. I think there's a large chunk of my year that I would have considered myself a power dater. And I think I've learned a lot. But one thing that I've learned through doing dating a lot is just that it gets easier. And so when you do meet somebody that you feel kind of really connected to, you've already kind of you've had so much practice that it's just easier to kind of like get into the flow of getting to know somebody because you've really taken the pressure off of what a first date is and what it should look like. And you just don't have that like the pressure to perform in a certain way as you might if you do less dating and you're just less practiced about it. I think it's a practice just like anything else. And the more that you do it, the better you get at it. And then you can just like approach every date with a little bit more confidence.
Mm.
Mm, so your skills, because Netta was talking about getting those dating skills.
Can I ask a question to Rich now, Rich Jusbiak? And this is a little bit of a downer question as we have about a couple minutes left. But I do feel like some people feel like they've got to stop or they've got to take a break at some point. And how do you know when you've reached that point?
Probably when it's not fun at all, really.
Yeah.
And I think I think that like the amount of fun you'll have probably has something to do with your approach. If you're going out saying, I need to find a partner, you're putting a lot of stress on this. You're putting a lot of stress on yourself. It's a lot of pressure to live up to. If you're looking at this, you know, doing 100 dates in a year for the fun of it, you know, or as just inquiry, as like, I want to just meet people and put myself out there. You're taking a much different approach. There's less pressure than with those circumstances, you're more likely to have fun.
Yeah, that's. I think that's what that's the basic answer, right? If you're putting yourself, if you're looking for the end goal, as you start, it's probably not going to be super enjoyable. Is that do you vibe with that, Netta?
I do. I think that it to be open, you're going to experience a whole lot more joy.
Yeah.
And is that the big piece of advice? If you were to give people one piece of advice, if you're out here, you're single, you want to meet that partner, you know, mindset.
Yeah. Develop your dating skills. Yeah. Be curious and find joy in others.
Yeah. Your one piece of advice, Kate?
Yeah. Be authentic. Know what you want and be really upfront about it so that you can find somebody that's looking for the same thing that you're looking for.
Yeah. Rich, final word.
Don't take things so personally, I think. Look at it as an adventure and please floss your teeth.
Oh,
oh my God. There were years I would have failed. There are years when I would have failed that test. I'm just going to be honest. I'm a flosser now. I wasn't always a flosser. That's a different
show. Never too late.
Oh my God. It's a different show. Join us next week for Dentistry 101. That is the end of Studio 2 today and this week. I want to thank our guests, Netta Rifai, Philly-based dating coach and matchmaker, Rich Juzwiak, co-writer of Slate's sex and relationship advice column, How to Do It, and Kate Catanella of the Free Dating Advice Philly Project. You can catch them around town. Thanks to all of you for being here.
And thank you. Yes, and thank you to all of our callers. You guys were so vulnerable today. We appreciate you. And thank you to our producers, Debbie Builder, Paige Murray-Bessler, Andreas Copes, Al Banks. Thanks for being our engineer today. Kevin McCrory is our executive producer. Joan Isabella is WHYY's audio general manager. From Studio 2 at WHYY here in Philly, I'm Cherry Gregg.
I'm Abby. Talk to you next week.
I said, are you gonna be my girl?